Please stand if you're able. Good morning, everyone. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Tomei.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be led by Mike Farrell, who is from Oak Grove in Clackamas County, a guest of Representative Tomei. He's going to be sharing with us a couple of poems this morning. Mike.
Good morning. I hope you all are well. In the world of arts and literature, poetry flies so low under the radar, it is nearly invisible. Not today. I want to thank especially Carolyn Tomei for her kind invitation, Obie Rutledge for his guidance, cheer, and hospitality, and to you for this opportunity to help celebrate National Poetry Month in this way. It is a thrill to read to such an esteemed group in such a large room at such an historic place. I would like to read two short poems and let you get on with the difficult task of steering our state through these tough times. April is National Poetry Month, a month in the middle of spring when, according to Alfred Lord Tennyson, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love. And it's also the month whose showers bring May flowers. This first poem is about that young man's fancy, giving notice. He, as if for the record, said she had eyes so blue you could get lost in them, implying her eyes were surrounded by points of departure largely known, and that to venture beyond without a map or a compass to a forget-me-not iris clear as a tropical bay is no mere day at the beach nor walk in the park, but instead a long roadless trek past the disputed borders of sanity, the checkpoints of desire, into a wilderness of possibilities where eyes and the stories they suggest find the polar dreaming of the equatorial, the desert wanting of the sea. And now you are packing your bag, taking just what's necessary, toothbrush, cash, a change of heart, giving no notice to friends and family that you might be back in a minute, an hour, a week, a year, the end of your life. The last poem is about the hard rain before it brings those Mayflowers. Two letter carriers of my generation, both of whom I carried mail with, passed away recently, just short of retirement. Kelly Pendell was our union vice president. She was a warm and generous and a wonderful person. Steve Bryant was a Marine, a war hero, awarded two medals of valor and the Purple Heart. I would like to dedicate this poem to them and letter carriers throughout our state and elsewhere, maybe even working in the rain today. Park and Loop. In a biblical rain, I was in a seashell. I could hear the ocean outside, see its pull along the curbs and in the storm drains. The weather was so gloomy, color had no pulse. I didn't see a bird all day. When it's like this, I wear a billed hat, a hooded sweatshirt, try to keep the rain from off my glasses and down my neck, keep going until tomorrow. Rain blew up my sleeves. Mail melted in my arms and dissolved in my hands. My route is sinking. Between porches, I walk on water. In the midst of this miracle, window people eye me agnostically. Well that they should. I feel the first water in my mortal underwear. I suspect they believe more in the end of rain than the rain itself, that all rains, even this one, will stop. It is the faith of insiders. Out here, I watch the boats in the driveways and parked on the streets. When they lift off their trailers, I'll be ready. Two by two, I'll save all the animals I can. Endangered species first, management last. We'll make for higher ground and a new world. Wait for the rainbow, then send out the doves. Thank you.
Courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, help me welcome today Mike Farrell, our poet. Mike has lived in Oregon nearly his whole life. His poems have been published in the Oregonian and other literary publications, including From Here We Speak, an anthology of Oregon poets published by the Oregon State University Press. He's also co-host of the Multnomah County Library series called Verse in Person. They have presented many of Oregon's finest poets, including two National Book Award finalists. Mike also serves as a member of the Parks Advisory Board for Clackamas County. Mike and I first became acquainted at our local health club, where we talk politics, poetry, and pulmonary fitness. With Mike today is his girlfriend, Christine Mowry. Please stand at the side aisle there and wave. And her granddaughter, Anna Tursik, and his friend, Jim McCrory, with his granddaughter, Marion McCrory. The granddaughters have graciously consented to this as a necessary step on the way to visit the nearby H.C. Gilbert House Children's Museum. Have a wonderful day. I also want to call to everybody's attention, Mike is a mail deliverer, and we often acclaim firefighters and our public safety officers. I think we take for granted the fact that we get mail 6 days a week, and there are people who work hard out in the elements to bring that mail to us. And I want to acknowledge Mike and the other mail carers who do that for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and welcome. Let's move to our moment in Oregon sesquicentennial history. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's minute is History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Philip Cogswell, associate editor of the Oregonian. Democrat Edith Sterrett Green represented Oregon's 3rd Congressional District from 1955 through 1974. During her 20 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, she gained a national reputation for her leadership in shaping federal education policy and her advocacy for equal rights for women. She was known for her independence, tenacity, and ability. Green's political career began in 1952 when she stood as the Democratic candidate for Oregon's Secretary of State. She was defeated in that race by the incumbent Republican Earl T. Newbery. In 1954, she ran against Tom McCall for the U.S. House in Oregon's 3rd Congressional District, winning that contest with 52% of the vote. After that race, she easily won re-election. In the House, she drafted legislation to equalize pay between men and women, which in 1963 resulted in the Equal Pay Act, and she helped pass Lyndon B. Johnson's anti-poverty legislation in 1967. She was also a firm supporter of early civil rights legislation. Green broke with President Johnson and all but a handful of her House colleagues with her early opposition to the buildup of U.S. troops in Vietnam. She was one of only 7 House members to vote against President Johnson's request in 1965 for funding the escalation of military involvement there. When Green retired from the House of Representatives at the end of 1974, she returned to Portland, where she lived until her death in 1987.
Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, colleagues. I have a few honorary pages to introduce, and I'm going to ask you to stand when I call your name. Tatiana Kostrykin. Oh, I almost got through it well. She's from McNary High School. They're all from McNary High School today, and they're all sophomores, and she's going to be a volunteer at Salem Hospital. Next, we have Samantha Crook. She's busy. She's in choir, theater, dance, swim team, and is busy with her church youth group. Katie Vergara. She's also on swim team, busy with her church and youth group, and she's looking forward this summer to volunteering at the Salem Hospital. Wendy Nelson. She's been in 2 plays, and that is, boy, that's a demanding schedule there, and concert choir. And I will say, notwithstanding our beautiful choir we had yesterday, McNary has one of the best concert choirs in the state, in the Northwest, I would bet. Lilia Marchuk, also in the choir and involved in church activities, and all of them great students, and they're here today with us, so give them a big welcome.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce two honorary pages. They are both from Kelly Middle School in Eugene. Helen Cutting, would you please stand? Helen is here with us today, and her favorite activity is track and distance running. And also Annie Doggett is here, who participates in band, track and field, volleyball, church, and writing. Thank you both. See you later.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I have three honorary pages here today from Ashland Middle School. Emma Rose Parker, if you please stand up. Emma Rose is 12 years old in the 7th grade, and activities and interests include French, taiko drumming, piano, soccer, archery, and music composition. Also with us is Gabe Young from Ashland Middle School, and Gabe's interests include soccer, youth symphony, concert band, and jazz band. And joining to fill out the trio is Riley Richmond from Ashland Middle School, whose activities and interests include saxophone, math, soccer, science, tennis, and jazz band. Thanks for being with us here today in your capital. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thanks to all our pages. We appreciate your service to the House today. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today, although they're probably downstairs in the Galleria, I have members of the boards of three of my ports, and they have great displays downstairs, and I encourage you to look through the displays of all the ports that are in the Galleria today and welcome them to our capital.
Further courtesies. We do want to ask the folks who are with the Rose Festival Court in the, I think they're in the left rear gallery, to stand. Oh, I'm sorry, that is the other left. Welcome, we're glad you're here. Welcome to the Capitol. Clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Off the floor. Representative Buckley. Excused for business to the House. Excused, Representative Cannon and Representative Van Orman. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he's approved to sign the following bills, House Bill 2433 and 2540.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 5, 103, 118, 171, 225, 262, 274, 306, and 556.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HJM 22, requesting passage of the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
Measure read for the first time is passed to the speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Berger.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2261 and repass the bill.
Representative Berger moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2261A and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill is concerning the bonding authority of the Department of Housing and Community Development. It passed unanimously in early March out of this chamber. The Senate resolved some conflicts with the disconnect, House Bill 2157. These are just conflict amendments, and then the Senate unanimously passed it. I urge concurrence.
Is there further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
Thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2261 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlich, how do you vote? Greenlich votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. House Bill 2261, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that H.R. 3 be withdrawn from the Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities.
Representative Hanna moves that H.R. 3 be withdrawn from the Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. You'll recall, colleagues, that House Rule 9.30 calls that immediately following the motion to withdraw a measure from committee, the clerk shall read the bill's measure's number, title, and summary. The clerk will do so.
H.R. 3 expresses approval and support of forest resource management plans developed under Western Oregon Plan revisions, urges governor to take steps to support, ensure, and facilitate speedy implementation of resource management plans.
As set forth in House Rule 5.15, the motion to withdraw a measure from committee is not debatable. Those who are of the opinion that H.R. 3 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Ag, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin. Roblin votes aye. Representative Reed. Reed votes no. Representative Clem. Clem votes aye. Representative Witt. Witt votes no. The motion having failed to receive the required majority is declared failed. Further propositions and motions? First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3487, relating to child care facilities.
Bill read for the first time. It's passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2137, relating to protective proceedings. House Bill 2262, relating to reinstatement of charges after plea. House Bill 2313, relating to definitions of legal entities. House Bill 2539, relating to limitation of fireworks inside cities of 300,000 or more population. House Bill 2676, relating to tobacco products. House Bill 2718, relating to women, veterans, health care needs, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2868, relating to child care facilities. House Bill 2893, relating to olive oil. House Bill 2987, relating to child care programs. House Bill 3039, relating to qualified and renewable energy products, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3097, relating to emergency medical personnel. House Bill 3103, relating to practice of pharmacy. House Bill 3171, relating to jury service.
Bills read for the second time were passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2394, relating to service of legal documents.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2394. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Don't know whether I'm committee or on the House floor. Any rate, colleagues, I rise today in support of and urge your support for House Bill 2394, which is a housekeeping measure of sorts in that it corrects some flaws in our current statutes relating to service of subpoenas. The first instance is that it allows the process server to serve a subpoena to the parent or guardian of a witness who is under the age of 14. Secondly, it cleans up language regarding service of subpoenas to law enforcement officers when that service is done to the individual designated by the agency to accept service, and makes it clear that a 10-day rule, which currently exists in statute, applies to the service in those situations. And finally, it also clarifies and makes it part of the law that service of a stalking order must be done personally unless the person who the stalking order is against has appeared in court and the order has been imposed in court. So in other words, service must be made directly on the perpetrator, the defendant, and it can't be done in an indirect way, so they must receive direct service. It also allows the sheriff to fax a copy of the stalking order, which is now permissible under restraining orders as well. This was brought to us by the Sheriff's Association and had the full support of other law enforcement entities as well.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2394, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2395, relating to enforcement of agency warrants.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2395. Representative Barker.
Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2395 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Barker moves that House Bill 2395 be referred to the Committee on Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion. Colleagues, this bill came from the Sheriff's Association and also brought by the good representative from the Central Coast. We thought we were going to save $100,000 of state funds. However, after passing this out of committee, a fiscal showed up on it of some millions of dollars, which we are unable to understand. However, since it was short, we're asking to move it back to rules so that can be clarified.
Is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2395 should be referred to the Committee on Rules will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion carries. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2395 is referred to the Committee on Rules. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2510, related to veterans preference in public employment.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2510A. Representative Wisnitz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Honorable colleagues, I bring House Bill 2510A to you today. This is a pro-military veteran bill from your Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services with a unanimous vote. Last year, a member of the Redmond VFW asked me to introduce this bill. He'd lost a job and was applying for a classified position at the Redmond School District. During the application process, he learned that he would not receive veterans preference points because he'd been out of the military for more than 15 years. The current law states that a veteran is eligible to use the veterans preference for in ORS 408.230 only for a position for which the application is made within 15 years from discharge or release from service in the armed forces, and only once. Since the Civil War, the nation's military veterans have been given some degree of preference in appointments to federal jobs. House Bill 2510A implements lifetime veterans' hiring preferences for public sector employment positions. Boley worked with the bill to clarify existing definitions to facilitate Boley enforcement, and I appreciate their cooperation. Also, I want to thank the committee chair and the committee members for their support and leadership on this pro-military veteran bill. I urge your yes vote on this good bill for our military veterans. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnant, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
So maybe he'll just say he lives.
Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2510A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2527, related to electronic information.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2527. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2527 comes to you from the Consumer Protection Committee. It's a short bill and it's a simple bill. It simply says that if you are a government agency or an elected official and you send e-newsletters to people and your e-newsletter software is tracking who's opening the newsletter, what time they open it, who they forwarded it to, which links they clicked, that you disclose that that type of tracking software is in the e-newsletter. If you're wondering whether or not your e-newsletter has it, it probably does. Almost all platforms include this information now. Business entities disclose this, and therefore government should as well. The bill also clarifies that the information that can be gathered by that tracking software should not be subject to public records disclosure. When you mail a hard copy newsletter to one of your constituents, it's not the public's right to know what time they went to their mailbox or how many times they photocopied it and gave it to someone else. And that's essentially what that tracking information tells you. So this is just a little bill that helps law catch up with technology. It protects the privacy of our constituents and the constituents of our state agencies. And I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
No.
Gilliam votes no, correct? I couldn't hear you. Just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly, Representative. House Bill 2527, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2564, relating to motor vehicles.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2564A. Representative Call.
Speaker, House Bill 2564 does two things. First, it provides scheduling flexibility so that DEQ can adequately staff its vehicle inspection stations during peak demand hours, preventing long customer wait times and possible customer costs. The second part of this bill synchronizes Oregon law with federal requirements that specify when trucks transporting hazardous waste must stop before crossing railroad tracks serving individual businesses. Came out of Transportation Committee with unanimous vote, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Call, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem? Votes aye. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Dembro votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. House Bill 2564A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2589 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, April 30th, 2009's calendar. The carrier is excused today. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2713, relating to public safety officers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2713A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, 2713 comes to you from the Committee on Judiciary. The bill directs employers of public safety officers to adopt written procedures to implement safeguards for public safety officers that are subject to an interview as a result of being under investigation for misconduct. The safeguards include, but are not limited to, a reasonable amount of time to conduct the interview, allowing the officer to attend to his physical needs, allowing the officer representation, no promises of reward for answering questions, and not subject the officer to offensive language. The measure specifies a time frame for completion of the investigation into alleged misconduct of 6 months from the date of the first interview. The time frame does not apply if the officer involved is unavailable, involves worker compensation fraud, the officer waives the time limit in writing, or if the investigation requires coordination of multiple jurisdictions or multiple officers. Additionally, the measure allows public safety officers the opportunity to request, review, and contest documentation within their personnel record. The Oregon State Police, Department of Administrative Services, the League of Oregon Cities state the fiscal impact of the measure is minimal. The Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and the Department of Corrections state there is no fiscal impact. The Association of Oregon Counties states that the fiscal impact of the measure is indeterminate because the measure changes existing process and the formal procedure requirements may require additional officers for internal administration. Colleagues, this is a good bill and deserves your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just rise as the lone nay vote in committee. Colleagues, the only reason I'm voting no is that there is some confusion still. I think the policy and the procedures that this bill outlines are good for our public safety officers. I think it's a good policy and procedure. There's still some confusion as to whether this law will supersede existing collective bargaining agreements, and I just think that that needs to be cleared up, and definitely we need to know whether existing collective bargaining agreements override this law or this law overrides them.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2713A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. I'm sorry. Representative Edwards, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request that we return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Edwards requests unanimous consent to return the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today is Oregon Autism Day in the Capitol. We are coming up here on the end of April, and among other things that we focus on in the month of April is April is Autism Month. So here in the upper balcony, I ask that you please extend the courtesies of the House to a number of self-advocates, family members, and service providers, all here advocating today on behalf of Autism Services.
Welcome. Special welcome to Wayne Hammersley, the founder of the Northwest Autism Foundation. Any further courtesies, colleagues, while we're back to courtesies? Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2744, relating to employee leave for family members of military and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2744A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill arose from a request from a constituent of mine when Senator Bates and I were doing a town hall in Southern Oregon. It was a request of a spouse of a soldier that was deployed in Iraq. She asked why we could not allow at least a couple of weeks leave time with the family leave that we have currently existing in the state of Oregon to be part of this, so the individual that is debarking for duty or coming home from duty has an opportunity to be with their family and their spouse. This bill, this two-week leave period, is not an addition to the family leave plan. It is governed by the same regulations, 25 or more employees. It is taken off your family leave that you currently have today. So it will be part of the family leave program, but not addition to the family leave program. It is something that I think is very necessary for our returning vets and our debarking vets that debark on such a dangerous mission for this country. I urge your support. It came out of Veterans Committee unanimously.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Hanna votes aye. House Bill 2744A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3047, relating to mass transit safety.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3047A. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to start by saying thank you to Representative Matthews, Representative Call, also TriMet, for agreeing to cooperate and partner and experiment with this idea. Also, Representative Widener, who yesterday offered his support, making it unanimous support among committee members. I have tried every time I've carried a bill to keep it under 30 seconds because I knew about four bills that I might be carrying that I might want to go above 30 seconds. Here I will go about 2.5 minutes. The crime on TriMet in the eastern region of Multnomah County and Portland. Nice. I thought it was something I said. Now I know. He sees it coming. Mr. Speaker, permission to use a visual aid.
Representative Smith requests unanimous consent for the purposes of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none. Hearing none, so ordered.
My favorite company. The TriMet crime around the region has been going down over the last several years. The one place it hasn't been going down is in Representative Matthews, Representative Call, and my districts. That's the one place it's been going up. And I appreciate your ability to take me seriously while I wear this vest. There are a few things we can do about it. People probably saw the news accounts of the fights, etc., that happened on the MAX line. And there are a few things that have been proposed to deal with that challenge. The first is increasing police presence. That's a good idea. They have done some of that, and I'm in support of that. However, every officer we add is about $130,000, officer plus training plus equipment plus benefits. That's $250,000 for every pair. Can't play that game that many times. Second idea is to close the system, and I don't mean that by that shutting it down, but instead turnstiling it so you can't get on a MAX line, can't get on the MAX, without going through a turnstile and paying. Challenge with that is nearly impossible to do that on some stops. So we've got a two-part plan to address this. One part is in this bill. The first part, not on this bill, is visible ticketing. Instead of giving somebody a little ticket they put in their pocket, give them the same thing we do with cars parked downtown. Give them a sticker that they can put on their coat, or a lanyard if they're a monthly operator, monthly rider they can wear around their neck. You're going to use this to go negative on me with labor, aren't you? I know it. So the first part is visible ticketing. And then when a transit greeter or a transit officer looks in the MAX line, they don't have to racial profile, age profile, noise profile. They can ticket profile. The second idea is this bill. Transit greeters. What does Walmart have to do with this? Or Fred Meyer. When you go into Walmart, you will see that somebody will greet you and say, hey, thanks for coming to Walmart. And they don't do that because they're such a nice company that cares so deeply about their customers, although they might. They do it because they have studies that proves that it reduces shoplifting. If somebody says hello to you and greets you as you come in, you think people are watching you, and you are less likely to steal things. That's why Fred Meyer, more recently, has adopted the same practice. This bill would create a pilot project to invite transit greeters onto the MAX lines who would be trained, not authorized to intervene, but only to observe and report, armed merely with a vest, probably not a Walmart vest, and a walkie-talkie to report to nearby police officers if they saw something, but more importantly, merely to say, hey, thanks for riding the MAX today. So community-oriented, cost-efficient way to try to experiment to increase safety on our MAX line, to increase people's confidence so they can ride it, to make sure we're getting more value out of the public dollars we are spending. And I don't want to go to 5 minutes, so I will stop there. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
After sitting in committee, TriMet was concerned at one point about having greeters and the liability issues with that. TriMet came to agreement on this. I came in support of it. After the Walmart greeter scenario, it's kind of left me in doubt on why I changed my support, but I still will be voting aye today.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This, if you're in doubt at all about the TriMet line system, a lot of folks do want to ride that. It is a great transportation system. Our mayor of Gresham, Shane Bemis, took a very active role in getting more police presence on MAX, and TriMet has done what they can. He's also, through a State of the City address, mentioned to our citizens that they need to be more active on volunteering to help with the deficit in the city. This is one of those ways that citizens can get involved in their own safety, and I believe the greeter bill will start us down that road. I appreciate the good representative bringing this forward and urge your aye vote.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'll be brief. There are just three things I'd like to highlight. First of all is that we do have the honor system on the MAX line, and what this bill tries to do is bolster that honor system. I think there are a lot of us who believe that people in a largely populated area can come together and follow the laws and create something like the TriMet system for the betterment of the public and kept in public trust. And so this bill is trying to, foster positive behaviors amongst people who utilize that system. The second thing this bill does is there is a perception that the MAX line is unsafe, and whether or not you believe that that is true or not, that perception drives people in my community to be fearful to ride. and to the extent that we can make the TriMet system a more inviting, a more friendly place, and we can turn around that perception, then we, all of us who live in East Multnomah County who benefit from that system, can utilize that system more fully and with less apprehension. And then finally, TriMet has been a great partner with East Multnomah County after a very tragic incident a little over 2 years ago, has actually funded police officers on the MAX line. They have partnered with us on this bill, and I just wanted to say how grateful I am to TriMet for their willingness to work with us to make the system safer and to really just listening to the concerns of the people in my community and my district. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
Other than to say thank you, Mr. Speaker, no, that's good.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative, the rest have voted. House Bill 3047A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3140, related to unemployment insurance benefits and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon House Bill 3140A. Representative Huffman, followed by Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, about 6 weeks ago, employees of a company called Keith Manufacturing in Madras contacted me and asked if there was anything we could do because their work share benefits were going to expire this week. I had to find out what work share was, and so thanks to the help of Director Warner from the Employment Department and Director Byerly from the Unemployment Department and some colleagues here on the floor, deep appreciation to my colleague from Ashland and Happy Valley and North and Northeast Portland, we managed to get this bill to the floor in record time. I'm going to be brief, but there are several numbers in this bill, so I will speak slowly. House Bill 3140 is truly a jobs bill. It keeps Oregon businesses operating and Oregonians working. The program affected by 3140 is called WorkShare. WorkShare program allows businesses to reduce the worker's hours by 20 to 40% per week and have the worker paid a corresponding percentage of their unemployment insurance benefits. Under WorkShare, the first 26 weeks of a 52-week period is paid with federal dollars. Thanks to the work of Oregon's Employment Department and Unemployment Department directors, HB 3140 allows Oregon to extend employee benefits an additional 26 weeks if needed within the one-year period. The second 26 weeks will be paid out of Oregon's Unemployment Trust Fund. In 2007, fewer than 50 employers were using the WorkShare program. In 2008, that number had grown to 70 employers. And last week, 477 companies were enrolled in WorkShare. There is an average of 16 employees per employer using the program. The average weekly payment in 2009 has been $84 per week. Employers have traditionally used WorkShare between 4 and 16 weeks for seasonal slowdowns. An estimated 10% of participating employers using WorkShare will exhaust the 26 weeks currently allowed and use the full 26 weeks of this extension. For Oregon workers that do not want to go on full unemployment, I encourage an aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you also to my colleague, the representative from District 59. It was clearly a team effort, but he very much spearheaded this effort, and I appreciate it. It's going to help a lot of Oregonians. And really, I very much enjoy serving with you, sir. The WorkShare program, which the representative just described to you, is something that benefits 477 Oregon companies, on average, actually. There's actually on average three in each of our districts.
in 59 out of the 60 districts, with apologies to the representative, I believe, from the heart of Washington County. This bill will allow employers to do four things. It will allow them to retain skilled workers. It will allow them to reduce hiring and retraining costs when business picks up again. It will allow them to avoid the hardships of full layoffs, and it will improve employee morale. Similarly, this bill will do three things for employees. It will avoid job loss and going on 100% unemployment benefits. It will retain employment benefits, such as health insurance for them, and will help employees feel more secure in these uncertain times. Colleagues, this is a very good bill. It will keep thousands of Oregonians employed and will also reduce the impact on our unemployment trust fund. Please join us with an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, thanks to the bill. Thank you to the carriers of this bill. I also want to offer a special thanks to the representative from the Soul of Portland, who is gracious enough to allow us to use his bill as a vehicle for this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Ashland kind of did the thanks, and I do want to thank the representative from North and Northeast Portland for allowing the vehicle to be used. I encourage your aye vote. Thank you.
Those with the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 3140A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3348, relating to search warrants and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3348. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3348 would authorize special agents employed by the governor to apply for search warrants. It essentially codifies current practice. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Wisnitz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, both the good representative from Salem and myself voted no in committee. It was a misunderstanding. The Farm Bureau had not reviewed the bill. The Farm Bureau is neutral on the bill, and we'll be voting. Both of us will be voting yes for the bill today. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Bruin votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. House Bill 3348, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3474, relating to garnishments.
Question now arises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 3474. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 3474 comes to you from my district, actually, as a result of some concerns expressed by a constituent of mine who is a small business owner in the Bend area. And we were talking one day, and she was referencing the fact that the number of, out of 300 employees that she had spread across six businesses, the number of garnishments she was now executing each month exceeded 100. And she asked me if there wasn't something that could be done to compensate in some way, shape, or form the costs associated with complying with the garnishment laws and fulfilling her obligation under those laws. And so I did some research for her and discovered that back about 8 years ago, this body passed a law allowing a $1 processing fee to be assessed for every week of wages or partial week of wages that a garnishment was paid. And looking at the cost of inflation and the increased impact due to the current economic situation, I approached several of my colleagues in this body who all agreed that doubling that fee to $2 would be imminently reasonable under the circumstances. And so what you have before you today is an increase, a twofold increase of the processing fee that was allowed back in 2001, passed by this body. And this provision is supported by the Oregon Business Association. I've talked with folks with the Oregon Creditors Association who are neutral on the issue, and I would urge your aye vote today. It is good for small business. It is good for recognizing the role that particularly small business plays in making the system work properly. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Sigler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes no. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Maurer votes aye. House Bill 3474, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5043, relating to financial administration of the Public Utility Commission and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 5043A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5043A is the budget bill for the Public Utility Commission. The three-member commission is responsible for ensuring that consumers receive adequate utility service at fair and reasonable rates while allowing regulated companies the opportunity to earn an adequate return on their investment. Sources of support for the agency include assessments on regulated utilities, including natural gas, water, wastewater, investor-owned electric utilities, and telecommunications providers. Telecommunications subscribers are assessed an additional amount to support the provision of service to rural areas and to support basic telephone service to low-income Oregonians and assistive devices to the disabled. Federal funds support the enforcement of gas pipeline safety regulations, and the agency receives no general fund support. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends a total budget of $135,868,065, 128 positions, and 126.5 FTE. The committee approved the deletion of a key performance measure related to the Board of Maritime Pilots, with the exception that the board submit a new measure to the 2011 legislature, which better reflects the board's activities and emphasizes related a measure related to the applicable waterways. The budget received unanimous approval from your Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and I urge your approval of 5043 as amended.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to be on the safe side, I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict, please.
I have a relative who is employed at this department.
Any further conflicts or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 5043A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5047, relating to financial administration of the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5047A. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. House Bill 5047 is the budget bill for the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission. The commission issues licenses and registrations to teachers, administrators, and other education personnel. The budget is supported by other funds generated from licensing and registration fees paid by these professionals. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a budget of $5,354,000 of other funds and 25 full-time equivalent positions. The budget authorizes an additional 3.5 full-time equivalent positions to address an increasing level of discipline cases and one full-time equivalent position to maintain upgraded technology business systems. The committee also reviewed and approved four of the agency's key performance measures relating to customer service, timeliness of investigations, and provided direction to eliminate three measures relating to the review of administrative rules, providing workshops, and meeting best practices. These measures will be maintained as internal measures of workload rather than key performance measures. Colleagues, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5047 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes no. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes no. House Bill 5047A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. My mistake. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of House Bill 2011 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Wednesday, May 6, 2009. The carrier is excused today. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2074, relating to Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2074A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill affects the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commissions, of which there's only one. Each county could have one, but only Multnomah County actually does. Currently, the county pays all the costs for this commission. This bill would change that so that the county would pay only 50%, and the remaining 50% will be apportioned to all the other taxing districts, cities, schools, special districts, etc. And it indexes the commission's annual budget by 3% a year. This is supported by almost all the taxing districts, all except the city of Portland. It's a reasonable way to support this commission, and all the taxing districts who testified felt that this was a very important commission for them, and they support this bill. Thank you very much.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Stigler votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2074A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2171, relating to failure to report as a sex offender.
Question now arises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2171A. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I bring you today House Bill 2171A from the House Committee on Judiciary with a unanimous vote. The bill requested by the Oregon State Police authorizes prosecution for failure to report as a sex offender following change of address in either the county in which the sex offender previously reported or in the county in which the sex offender now resides. There were some loopholes in the current reporting statute that made it very difficult to prosecute charges of failing to register as a sex offender. This issue concerns where the offender must report and the changes in the venue problems that arise because of lack of clarity in the current statute. House Bill 2171A clarifies that when an offender makes a change in residence, the offender must report both the move and their new address. This is another bill that relates to bringing Oregon into partial compliance with the Walsh Act. Colleagues, this is a good public safety policy bill, and I ask for your yes vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. House Bill 2171A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2264, relating to civil actions for certain fraudulent conduct and appropriating money.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2264A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2264 comes to you unanimously from your House Judiciary Committee. This is an important bill that will authorize the Attorney General to bring a civil action against anyone who obtains or attempts to obtain money, property, services, or benefits from the state based upon false or fraudulent claims or behavior. The state enters into millions of dollars of contracts every year. Additionally, millions of dollars are spent to purchase goods and supplies. Unfortunately, from time to time, contractors defraud the state and do not provide the quantity, quality, or services the state should have received. Presently, Oregon has no law that allows the Department of Justice to recoup money paid to individuals or companies who fraudulently bill the state. House Bill 2264 provides the Oregon Department of Justice a tool that 28 other states have, as does the federal government. The bill allows the Attorney General to file a civil action against a person for knowingly presenting a false claim for payment. Moreover, the bill allows a court to award either twice the amount of damages incurred or $10,000 for each false claim, whichever is greater. It also provides a safe harbor for those who cooperate with the AG's investigation. Existing state agency fraud detection units, such as the Division of Audits and the Department of Human Services Fraud Investigations Unit, both do an excellent job of ferreting out fraud, and House Bill 2264 would not duplicate that work. This bill has only a minimal fiscal impact for the state, because HB 2264 creates revolving accounts into which a portion of the recovered funds would be deposited. It is expected that the costs and expenses associated with bringing these claims will be self-funded. With the passage of the state and federal stimulus packages, at least $175 million, and certainly far more, will be spent in the next few years in state money. To ensure that the money is well spent, the Department of Justice needs a tool to go after contractors who misrepresent their services or fraudulently bill the state. Passage of House Bill 2264 will raise the stakes for defrauding the state of Oregon and will thus deter and reduce fraudulent claims. Again, this bill had a unanimous vote from Judiciary Committee. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I want to applaud this body for taking up this issue. False claims in Medicaid billing is a significant issue across the country. There is a federal act called the Federal False Claims Act, and we talked to the Attorney General and tried to get that addressed in the bill, and their expertise let us know that, in fact, no state has this Federal False Claims Act that has been able to claim a 10% additional federal payment for going after these false claims. And I want to applaud the Attorney General for their work and the work of this body. So I urge a strong aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I too applaud the purpose of this bill, but I would direct your attention to page 3 and specifically lines 38 through 43. It's important that when we give the power to the state to bring actions against citizens or small businesses, that in the event the state acts inappropriately, we don't break the small business or the defendant merely by the weight of the cost of defending their actions. And so on page 3, subsection, it's section 3, subsection 8, starting with line 38, it talks about who's going to pay for the investigation costs, the discovery costs, and the litigation expenses. And it says, essentially, on line 39, that if the state prevails, then the state will receive all the reasonable attorney's fees for costs, fees, investigation, preparation, litigation. But then it goes on to say, on lines 40 and 40 through 42, that the court may award reasonable attorney's fees and costs, investigation, preparation, litigation to a defendant. This would be the small business or whoever was found, who was prosecuted under this. But if the defendant prevails, they can only receive their costs if the Attorney General had no objective, reasonable basis for bringing the action or no reasonable basis for appealing an adverse decision of the trial court. So basically, it's almost impossible for the state to bring an action against a contractor that is absolutely out of thin air. There's going to be some basis for it. But if it was wrong, and if they prosecuted this case and the defendant was able to show that it was wrong, that they hadn't been fraudulent, they hadn't abused the system or misrepresented information, then it's only fair that if the defendant prevails, the defendant ought to get his expenses paid. Why should just the government get their expenses paid from the defendant if the government wins, but the poor citizen gets strapped with all of those expenses that he incurs to defend himself if the defendant prevails? And so I have no dog in this fight. I don't defend these, I don't do this kind of litigation myself, but I'm trying to watch out to make sure that this is fair. And so I'm not going to be voting against this bill, but I'm making this statement so that the Senate will correct that, and all they have to do is say that the prevailing party shall be awarded these, you know, the costs of this litigation, so that we don't have a stacked deck in favor of the government and against the citizen. And so I'm a yes vote on this, but I'll be contacting the judiciary's chairman on the Senate side asking that this change be made, and I would hope that you would consider doing the same so that we ensure that there's fairness to both parties in such an action. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close?
Just very briefly, Mr. Speaker, I want to acknowledge the point made by my good colleague from Southern Oregon. He is right. The provision in the bill is not exactly symmetrical with respect to attorney's fees, but that's not unusual. And the purpose of that language is to make sure that the government is not deterred from bringing meritorious claims against contractors. The language does leave the possibility for attorney's fees to be awarded against the contractor if, in fact, the government proceeded with an unreasonable and frivolous lawsuit. I would also point out that this bill was extensively negotiated between the Department of Justice and industry groups, and evidently this provision was not a source of concern to them, nor did they come to the committee and testify to any opposition or concern with respect to that clause. So I think this bill is good policy. I urge your aye vote.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2264A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2292, relating to the Department of Corrections and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2292A. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, this bill essentially extends a sunset on current existing authority of the Department of Corrections to be able to contract with outside correctional facilities under certain circumstances. The current authority is scheduled to sunset this year, and this bill would extend that authority in emergency situations. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. House Bill 2292A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2500, relating to public finance, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2500A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I haven't had the opportunity to stand here and tell you that you having an opportunity to vote on one of those bills that 10 or 15 or 25 years from now, you will be able to look back and be thankful that you were one of the people that began the process of transparency in our state. But this is that kind of bill. This is one of those that after we all get done with our careers here, people will look back and say, that was a really great moment in open government. And it began here today. And I want to compliment the other co-sponsors, and I know they're all going to speak, our co-sponsor from the Kaiser Newberg in St. Paul, the representative from the Bedrock District, and the representative from the rural Deschutes County. This is a bill that when we first began, and I looked at it as one of the co-sponsors, I said, whoa, this is going to cost a lot of money. And we don't have a lot of money this session. But the four of us got together and made a commitment to each other that we were going to work to put together a bill that began the process of opening up our books, the state of Oregon, to the public through the Internet. And we left our egos at the doors. We talked to DAS, who came and originally was very nervous about this bill, and we said, you know, you're doing a lot of this stuff, and so all we're asking you to do is the job you already have. You're in charge of Oregon.gov. Much of the stuff that we want in this bill is already being produced and documents being produced in different databases. Isn't there a way that people doing their regular daily jobs can get the information to you and you can just post it so that we're not spending money, we're just having people do their own work and then sharing that with people? And wouldn't that, in fact, when you get all these requests for information, if it's there, there is no request for information, wouldn't that have a possibility of actually cutting down on your workload as individual members because you're actually, the material's there, they can go look, it's in an easy format to find as opposed to the struggle we have to do to find stuff that it is now. And they said, we can do that. And they went back to work, and they started producing materials, and they kept coming to us, and we kept pushing back. But what we have for you today is what I believe to be a great starting place that we can build on over the next number of sessions as we find resources. And as DAS works with other agencies to put their stuff in much simpler ways, so when they're collecting their data in the future, it's already ready. They already know how it can fit into this open books form of government that allows people to understand how we are spending our money, and I believe showing people that clearly we are making good choices with their dollars. And it also gives people the opportunity to voice their opinion about how things that maybe we could do to save money in the future. So from my perspective, the work that was done by DAS, and you'll hear that from others, and the work that was done by the group of us that were working on this bill, and I also want to thank another representative who had a bill of similar length that sent it to us. It brought in another group of people to talk about the bill. All of us got together with a single-minded purpose, and that single-minded purpose was we trust and want the public to understand what their state is doing, and that's what this bill is all about. I encourage your support and look forward to hearing from my colleagues on the bill.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnitz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Friends, the good representative from the Dunes did a great job. I want to try to make this short. He expressed a lot of my opinion about this is a great bill for all of us, and I hope we'll all vote yes for this bill. Serving in the military for over 27 years, believe it or not, the military has a very open policy about its procurement, and everyone's looking at that, from Jack Anderson for us older guys to everyone else looks at the procurement system. So this was a big project for us to get going. I'm on the budget subcommittee for education, so the Open Books project that Chalkboard and OD put together made me realize we could do something. We need to do it for the rest of the state government. The good representative from Kaiser and I have talked to other colleagues from other states about their websites they have in place, and we got a really good response from the citizens, and we went together to try to find a way to make this happen in Oregon. Other states have also been able to save millions of dollars just by having the ability to look at this information on the website. And the federal and state economic stimulus package include provisions for increasing transparency. In our state, we already had the special Go Oregon website that helps follow the money, and this is another process. Colleagues, you know, we have our total budget is $50 billion. We have 50,000 state employees and 90 different agencies in the budget process. So now the taxpayers will have a transparent site to go to, a searchable website to find where, how the money's coming in and going out. I want to especially thank the colleagues that we worked with, the co-sponsors on this bill, and also our staffs. Certain staffs put together a lot more work on this project, but all the staffs really got in there and pitched. But colleagues, a special thanks to DAS. We sometimes criticize DAS, but they really came with a can-do attitude on this project, especially Mr. Dugan Petty and Marjorie Taylor and their DAS team deserve a special thanks. Open Books, Oregon Open Books will result in zero fiscal. That was our objective, and we accomplished it because we were able to work together. So, colleagues, please vote yes for this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Jefferson Smith.
This will be the first and last time I think I will have to rise three times in a single day.
To the bill. Promises, promises.
To the bill. I've just expanded my words. I'll look for yield soon. The Goo Goos, or good government guys, were political groups founded in an era when the United States was dominated by political machines. Many of the Goo Goos were progressive Republicans who helped lead to the election of one of my and several of our political heroes, Teddy Roosevelt. They started the city clubs across the country and changed the nature of politics in the progressive era in the United States. The term goo-goo was used a century ago by their detractors as a term of derision to belittle their public-spiritedness and violation of real politic. I also want to thank the co-sponsors of this bill and the staff who worked on it, and to say that today we can wear the term goo-goo not as a scarlet letter, but as a red badge of courage, and that today we get to be goo-goos. I'm a goo-goo, and they're goo-goos. I urge you to be an I vote and be a goo-goo too. Thanks very much.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I don't know how to follow that goo-goo speech. To the bill.
To the bill.
Being a small business owner like many of you, and we all have family budgets, it just makes sense to keep track of what's coming in to our budget, what's going into the bank account, and what we're spending on our everyday items. And after serving on the Government Accountability Committee the last few years, we all helped and contributed to improving oversight and auditing of state agencies. You know, everybody I've talked to, everybody says that this website seems like a no-brainer. And just like I mentioned, the families, we use our checkbook. We see how our money's being spent. We need to put our state's checkbook online for all to see. I hear from folks all the time who will say it's hard to figure out what the state is spending, how they're spending our state tax dollars. We see reports in the press, but we want to know the real dollar figures. And those of you on Ways and Means and Revenue, bless you, because I think you must have been bequeathed with some sort of PhD in secret decoder ring to figure out what the heck our state is doing with all the money and how it's divided out. And it shouldn't be that complicated. A national study last year showed that a third of all Americans search the web for information on government taxes and spending, but most are disappointed in the lack of good, easily understandable information. That is what's lacking, easily understandable information, and that's where we want to get. Former Supreme Court Justice Brandeis once said, sunlight is the best disinfectant, and that's very true, referring to government openness and transparency. Essentially, the first version of this particular website is going to be very basic. It's not going to be as elaborate with the specialized features and bells and whistles that we all were working toward, but we will eventually get there because we have to work as a state on developing a uniform accounting system and databases that will actually talk to each other. That was one of the big hurdles that we were encountering. But we do want to get it up and running as fast as possible with some good information for taxpayers and links to important areas like state audits and contracts for the new stimulus package and other things. And this is all information that is already public record. We will link to every agency and at least with the basic stuff such as their budget or their pie chart. This would be for the executive, legislative, judicial, treasurer, secretary of state, et cetera. And we were developing a mock-up website for you to see when this came to the floor. We were expecting it might happen tomorrow. But you will find in your boxes, your inboxes in your office, an example that you can see what we're thinking as far as what this website might look like. And I think this is definitely a good bill and should pass.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in support of 2500. As we all know, this is a bipartisan effort. It was this morning in the representative from the Bedrock District's remarks. That was the first time I had heard the term goo-goos. And although I'm quite familiar with the sound as a father of a newborn, but I think that this is the first step toward taking it beyond goo-goo and moving toward a Google government. And I really believe, I believe that the citizens of Oregon can make good decisions about who they send to their legislature if they have good information. And frankly, in my couple of sessions here, I have been absolutely astonished at how much we argue over what the facts indeed are. And I believe that bringing a little bit more transparency will not only increase accountability of the legislature and the other branches of government, but it also will serve to lower the temperature on some of the discussions that dominate this body. So given the budget challenges and the unprecedented nature of our times, it has never before been more important to bring this level of transparency to our government. This is a good step in that direction, and I urge your support for the bill.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill, please.
To the bill.
Thank you. Yeah, we had, as my good friend, Chair of the Rules Committee, pointed out, we had pretty much a parallel process going on in business and labor and rules. And I just felt, and he agreed, that we only needed one process. We did have a fairly large work group from business and labor and government to discuss these issues. And this is a great start. We're going in the right direction. With the advent of the computer, we can, as my friend here just pointed out, we can get the accurate information out to the citizens of this community. But to be quite frank with you, this is going to help policymakers as well get to the facts. How many times have we all been told one thing and then turned out to find out that it was another, whereas at your fingertips you could get to the accurate information, which is absolutely important to making good policy decisions here in the state of Oregon. So it's a good bill. Urge your vote. Thanks.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it's about time. This is a great bill. It's a government accountability issue, and you all know I've been a big government accountability advocate. And openness. One thing I want to say is this is a great step, and it's good information to put out on the web, but make sure that the people who look at this can understand it. Use plain language. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a short close, just to say thank you to all the people that helped make this happen, and in particular to the staff at DAS who stepped forward and made it happen for all of us. So thank you, and I urge everyone to vote aye.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2500A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2535, relating to donated medical items and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2535A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I am very pleased to bring House Bill 2535 to you today. It comes with a unanimous due pass recommendation from the House Healthcare Committee, and the bill originated from the experience of one of my constituents in Corvallis. She's a professor at Oregon State University named Deanna Kingston. Dr. Kingston is a breast cancer survivor, and when she contacted me about a year and a half ago, she let me know that, like many other serious health conditions, her breast cancer treatment often involved changing treatments in response to side effects or when new and more promising treatments became available. Deanna was very fortunate to have high-quality comprehensive health insurance that allowed her to try several medications and courses of treatment to find the right fit, even though, shockingly, some of these drugs can cost thousands of dollars for just one single dose. When, like Deanna, you consistently change your prescriptions, the result is that your previous prescriptions can go unused. And that means that right now, patients have no choice but to throw these in the garbage. And in addition to the environmental health impacts, it's also an extraordinary waste of good drugs. In contrast to Deanna's experience, she met many uninsured and underinsured patients in her support group. And as they sat around and talked about their treatment, she found that her friends in the support group were desperately needing some of the very unused medications that were sitting in her medicine cabinet at home. And it struck her as a terrible waste that she had them, they couldn't get them, there was something that had already been paid for, and yet you couldn't connect the two folks together. Deanna also learned in talking to survivors in other states that almost 40 states have charitable drug donation programs, and about 10 state legislatures have pending legislation. That means that adds up to 50. She asked me why Oregon didn't have one. You'll notice that a floor letter on your desk comes from the pharmaceutical industry supporting this bill. We are lucky to have a pharmacist right here in the building. The good representative from House District 23 was willing to share his expertise to ensure that the program was workable for pharmacies. The Healthcare Committee also worked closely with both Pharma and the Board of Pharmacy to refine the program, and both groups are enthusiastically supporting the bill. Two primary details of the program are, first, this is a completely voluntary program. No pharmacy is required to participate. The second most important point is that this program has very strict patient safety standards. All the applicable FDA regulations are included in the bill, along with broad rulemaking authority for the Board of Pharmacy to make rules above and beyond FDA public safety standards. In particular, in order to qualify, the drugs must be in sealed, tamper-proof packaging so that a pharmacist can say with confidence that the drug is safe for redistribution. Some have asked whether this restricts the program too much. In fact, although many of us are lucky enough to not have to know this, a single dose for a chronic illness can cost thousands of dollars just for a single dose. And some of the most expensive medications for serious and chronic illnesses come sealed in these single dose packets. This explains the success of the programs in 37 other states, some of whom report that in total they have redispensed more than $1 million worth of donated drugs in a single year to uninsured and underinsured patients. Colleagues, this is a common sense bill. We spoke to dozens of those states with these programs who have reported great success. In fact, the Iowa Board of Pharmacy reported total donations to date in the millions of dollars. With so many Oregonians out of work and struggling with their medical costs, this is a concrete proposal that we can enact with little impact on government expenditures. In a climate where we spend hours every day looking at the devastating cuts that we must make to get through this biennium and the next, this is a proposal to which we can give a hearty endorsement, deliver hope to people in need, and actually save some lives in the process. I'm very grateful to Deanna Kingston for bringing this issue to our attention and doing the legwork. This is also a great example of how the best ideas come from the citizens that all of us represent. So thanks to the Healthcare Committee and their excellent work. And colleagues, I urge your enthusiastic aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Thompson.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I rise today to support this bill wholeheartedly. Initially, I had some reservations about it because we, as in pharmacy, as in everything else, get bound up in rules and regulations and there's no way out. Actually, we found there were some very simple ways out and some other states had already done that before us, which made it very easy. The importance of this bill is going to be even greater as we move forward because more and more of the expensive, most expensive drugs are being put out now in blister packs, which allows them to be more readily entered into this program instead of being discarded. And the representative from Corvallis and Philomath is absolutely correct. We throw away millions of dollars worth of medication every year from hospitals, nursing homes, and private individuals that would be able to be redistributed under this program without any danger whatsoever to the patients receiving it. And many of those patients are going to be people who can't afford $1,500 a week for their cancer drug or $1,000 a dose for some of the newer biotech drugs that are on the market. This is a good bill. Something that we've needed for a long time. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Having House Bill 2535A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, April 30th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? There is. Okay. No one. I've changed my mind. We're going to have one more bill. Will the clerk read the next bill?
House Bill 2553, relating to motor vehicle accidents.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2553A. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And before I even start, let me say a big hearty thank you to the representative from Southwest Portland. She understood that I have a constituent here that needed to hear this bill, and so I very much appreciate it. Thank you so much. Colleagues, thank you for hearing this bill today, and my deep gratitude to the representative from Springfield and the members of the House Transportation Committee for their thoughtful deliberation preceding today's floor vote. House Bill 2553 is the Daniel Sawyer Memorial Bill. The provisions of this bill are very simple and, thankfully, will likely not be implemented very often. What this bill does is say that if there is a traffic fatality of a driving youth, so somebody driving 18 years or younger, on an Oregon highway, and if all other insurance remedies have been exhausted, then any reasonable remaining costs, including debris cleanup, cleanup of flares, glass, towaway, and disposal of a vehicle, will be paid for by the Oregon Department of Transportation, not, and here's the critical part, not surviving parents or family members. If you'd indulge me, I'd like Mr. Bill Sawyer to stand up. Bill is Daniel's dad. Bill works in Salem, is a constituent of mine, lives in Westland, and he came to me and my staff with this bill last year. And let me discuss this. This bill came about because of the tragic loss of Bill's son, Daniel Sawyer, and Daniel's best friend, both of whom were seniors at Westland High School, in Westland, of course. During Thanksgiving weekend of 2007, both of these young men lost their lives when a vehicle driven by Daniel Sawyer collided with a large commercial truck. Of course, colleagues, it goes without saying that there is no greater loss than the loss of a child. And you could only imagine, and hopefully none or very few of us will ever know, the anguish, the real painful anguish that Daniel's family endured after this loss and still has to deal with. In this specific situation, with this Thanksgiving weekend crash, because there were two fatalities and substantial property damage, Daniel Sawyer's auto insurance quickly reached its limit. So, if you can imagine, with all the anguish that's going on, Daniel's family, Bill, received a bill for thousands of dollars from a tow truck company for removal of the debris on the highway from Daniel's car and the large truck. Colleagues, to me, it didn't and doesn't seem right that a parent, after all of this, should be responsible for roadside cleanup and towing. Shouldn't this be ODOT's responsibility, colleagues? Wouldn't we expect this from ODOT? Other states' Department of Transportation handle this. Shouldn't Oregon do the same? Now, colleagues, I want to say something about Bill Sawyer. Bill, after all the anguish that I've already mentioned went through, actually went and visited the truck driver of the driving the truck that ended up in the fatality of Bill's son. As you can imagine, there was no physical damage to this gentleman, but as you can imagine, there was huge psychological trauma. Bill, with all the anguish that he was feeling, went to the truck driver to help the truck driver deal with his anguish and to help the truck driver get the sort of closure that anybody in that situation would want. Bill has been selfless in all of this, and I want you to understand, I'll close with this, this is not about Bill, this is not about any financial compensation for Bill, this bill isn't retroactive. As I said, Daniel Sawyer's family will not benefit financially from this, except that through the bill and through the memory of their son, Daniel Sawyer, this bill will help other families who have been in a similar situation avoid having to have at least that one last bit of harm and damage come from after all the pain and suffering goes on, that there's a bill in the mail. So I would ask colleagues to honor the memory of Daniel Sawyer and help other families, thankfully very few, but other families in the future avoid a similar situation, and I urge your eye passage. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bruin, do you wish to close? He does not. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2553A. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem votes aye. House Bill 2553A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Now, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bills remaining on today's third reading of the House bills be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, April 30th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the resolutions remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions be carried over to its proper place on Thursday, April 30th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5 relating to Adjutant General. Senate Bill 103 relating to fees for air contamination sources and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 118 relating to delegation of authority within Oregon University System. Senate Bill 171 relating to physical hazards to air navigation. Senate Bill 225 relating to alcohol-related offenses by persons under 21 years of age. Senate Bill 262 relating to courts and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 274 relating to administrative law judges and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 306 relating to attorney fees. Senate Bill 556 relating to automatic external defibrillators.
Bills passed the first time are read the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading Senate bills. Third reading Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Stiegler to change her vote on H.R. 3. It will not affect the outcome.
Representative Hanna moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Stiegler be allowed to change her vote on the motion on H.R. 3. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Representative Stiegler, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Stiegler votes aye. Other announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats will caucus in about 7 minutes in the caucus room. So grab your lunch and meet me in the caucus room.
Other announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, please grab your lunch and we will meet in the caucus room in about 10 minutes. Thank you.
Other announcements. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, tomorrow is the last day of the Child Abuse Prevention Month, and tomorrow is the event in Portland, Children's Trust Fund of Oregon, at the Governor Hotel from 5 to 7 p.m. I have one ticket left.
Other announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, real quick, we passed a bill today, House Bill 2500, that we can all go home and be proud of. It was good for the citizens of Oregon, and we can all take credit for that. But let me remind the body that this was a bipartisan bill. Last session, for some of the new members, the Speaker had a plan called Partner Bill, and you had to have two of each party to get something done. This was a partner bill, two Republicans and two Democrats working together to do this. But also I want to give special credit to a friend of mine, Linda Flores, that's not with us in this chamber this year. It was really Linda's idea. The good representative from Bedrock actually contacted her before this session and said, you've got a good idea, and I want to work with you. People, ideas come from both sides. Let's continue the spirit that we had in House Bill 2500 for this session, and also give credit to Linda Flores for her great idea. Thank you.
Other remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m., Thursday, April 30th, 2009.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m., Thursday, April 30th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m., Thursday, April 30th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.